Welcome back to Cargumentative, a Times Live podcast on which we talk about all things cars and motoring. I'm your presenter, Thomas Faulkner from the Sunday Times and Times Live. And this week, I'm joined by Dennis Dropper, but also two guests, Ruben van Niekerk from Leisure Wheels and Stuart Grant from the Float Chamber. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us. Thank you very much.
I knew you'd all chime in at once, so that's just the way it goes on these virtual studios. I know Ruben's taking it one step further. He's actually recording from his car, so that's a first for the show. We're kicking things off with some news, and Dennis, what's been happening in your corner of the world?
The big news in the motoring world this week is the fact that Formula One finally gets underway this weekend. So it will be the first part of an Austrian double header. They'll do two weekends in a row there. And even though they're starting the season, it's certainly going to be a televised spectacle because there's no spectators around because COVID-19 is still with us and social distancing rules still apply. So, yeah, that's going to be an interesting one to see after such a long break where everyone stands in the pecking order, Ferrari versus Mercedes versus Red Bull.
Yeah, I'm actually quite looking forward to it. I started to get back into Formula One over the last 2 years, probably because of that Netflix show, that Drive to Survive, kind of rekindled a little bit of interest. And it's going to be interesting. I'm a big Haas F1 fan and AlphaTauri, so I always like the underdogs and teams who usually come last or, towards the back of the grid. Going to be interesting to see how that works, especially with the double headers. I mean, are they going to have two races on one day, or is it like a race on a Saturday, a race on a Sunday?
The double header is that they're going to have two weekends in a row with races. So they'll still have just one race per Sunday, but the very next weekend they'll have another race in Austria. And the same will happen then when they go to the UK later on.
Okay. All right. Well, something to look forward to. At least we've got some entertainment for the next 2 weekends. Yeah.
Just on that note, I just wanted to point out that for the first time, South African Formula One fans can actually live stream this online. Previously, the only way you could do so, legally at least, was to have a DSTV subscription. But now you can live stream races for 86 Rand a month or $4.99 a month, and that gets you the radio transmissions as well. Every practice session, it lets you choose whose cockpit view you're watching. So it's quite a good service. I've signed up for it myself, so I'm going to test drive it for the first time this weekend.
Well, that's very cool, and I mean it's about time they actually did that because I know that you've had that functionality with the World Endurance Championship in the past with Le Mans and Silverstone. MotoGP has also had it for quite a few years. So it's good to see Formula One finally, getting themselves together there on the streaming front. Ruben, what's been happening on your side?
Yeah, like, I agree with you guys. I think the streaming thing is great because I've missed out on Formula One because we don't have the DSTV for a while now, and I've been following the MotoGP online and it works great. So I'm actually glad to hear that you say that, Dennis. But something interesting that I saw today is that the Geneva Motor Show has also now been cancelled, and I think it might be the final nail in the coffin for the whole traditional motor show scene. And the whole way things are done. We're having launches by Zoom and that. So I don't know if we'll ever see something like a motor show again. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I tend to agree with you. And I think anybody who's been following the motor industry over the last couple of years have seen that, motor shows aren't such a big deal anymore. A lot of manufacturers will choose not to go to shows that they used to attend. It's expensive. You've got to pay a lot of money to have stands. And I just don't think the returns are there anymore. And with the internet and social media and virtual reality and VR glasses and all this kind of fancy stuff, do you really need to cash out these big checks for stand space? It just seems unnecessary. So
there had been spectator attendance in motor shows had been in decline over the last few years in any case. And I think with this whole lockdown, that's just brought to light just how much you can do online. And that's, you know, maybe the whole going and looking at cars and the whole tire kicking thing isn't that important. As you mentioned, it's quite expensive, Thomas.
It is, yeah. Ruben, is there anything else?
I think, yeah, we're talking classic cars today, and I think it's interesting that Jaguar announced last week that you can now buy the engine block for your E-Type, brand new from Jaguar Classic. It's not a cheap part. I think it's about 320,000 Rand. And then if you got the documentation that you own a vehicle, you can get the same engine number stamped into it with the asterisk, of course. But it is great to see that big companies like this are putting in so much R&D and marketing money into parts for these old cars, you know, and it's lucky to see. If you got an E-Type, you can get a brand new block straight from the guys who made it originally.
Yeah, that's super cool, and it's nice to see Jag doing that. You know, Mercedes does it, so does BMW, and of course Porsche. I think they've really been pioneers on the classic car front in terms of making new parts and supplying parts. And I think manufacturers are understanding that, you know, there's a whole subculture of people out there who enjoy classics, who still use them frequently. Some people even have them as dailies, you know, because they just prefer that kind of car. And it's excellent to see manufacturers making stuff using modern technology to keep these older cars going. Moving on to Stu, you've been quiet in your corner.
Well, I've got a bit of a combo of the car show or the Geneva sort of thing and the classic world. There was a guy, Mark Woolley. I don't know, Dennis will probably remember Mark. He's a South African. He's overseas. He does a lot of events and hill climbs and organizing stuff for Jody Scheckter and blah, blah, blah. But he's just launched a classic motoring expo, X being E-XPO. And it's a virtual classic car show overseas where they'll have trade exhibitors even. You know, the classic car industry is quite huge. And they will have virtual stands, so you'll walk around the thing, come across a supplier you like. You can live talk to a salesman as if you were standing at the little 3x3 stand in Nasrec or something like that. So even the classic guys are mixing it up with some modern tech and trying to keep the car shows going in a similar but different way. And obviously, hopefully, to generate some income that they've all lost.
Yeah, Stu, yeah. I certainly remember Mark Woolley. It sounds like an exciting venture. Is it free to enter?
As far as I understand, it's free for spectators, and then exhibit would pay. You can find it. It's Classic Motoring Expo, and his business that brings it to you is Speed Stream Group. So I'm not sure of any more details other than that. But, yeah, it's free for the Joe public to virtually walk around.
Very cool. Well, that's definitely something to have a look at. And I think finally, just to wrap up news, Dennis, tell us about the Corolla GR that's going to take on the Golf GTI. Is this a rumor? Is it happening?
These are rumors, but they have been intensifying. So And when we asked Toyota about it, they just said no comment. So that generally means kind of watch the space that it's probably coming. So as you might recall, there was a Toyota Yaris GR launched recently, which is a 3-cylinder 1.6 turbo engine with 200 kilowatts, which is quite an impressive output for such a small engine. Mm-hmm. And word on the street is that engine might find its way into a Corolla. And as let's say a small car enthusiast might recall, Toyota used to be in this game with cars like the RSI. So it would be nice to see Toyota Corolla back in the space.
It definitely would. And I know Ruben's a big Golf GTI fan. Ruben, what do you think about a Corolla GR?
It sounds like a good idea. We'll have to wait and see how well they execute it because, you know, like there's been a lot of guys going for that Golf GTI crown. You know, like recently we saw Hyundai with a i30N, and it's kind of fallen short with what it actually delivers in the real world. And, you know, so, yeah, the golf, in my mind, still remains king, and the others still need some, still have some catching up to do, I believe.
Yeah, it's true. Volkswagen really does the GTI well, you know, and they pretty much are the kings of the hot hatch. They've been doing it the longest. So, yeah, good luck to Toyota. I'd still like to see one as a bit of a Toyota fanboy. So, yeah, hopefully that comes out sooner rather than later. Guys, that's it for news. We've got to wrap it up. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the show shortly.
Join me, Nicole Engelbrecht, your host on True Crime South Africa, a weekly podcast that covers both solved and unsolved South African true crime cases.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. We're talking to Ruben van Niekerk and Stuart Grant about classic cars, because let's face it, you know, in 2020, as much as new technology is kind of cool sometimes, it's still nice to have something old and analog and, you know, just old school to drive. Stu and Ruben, we had a pretty good outrun on the weekend, and got a chance to meet up with some like-minded classic car enthusiasts, and we took off on a nice little route. Where did we actually go? Because that was like new territory for me. I know that we left Joburg and ended up in Pretoria, but what route did we actually take?
Okay, yeah, so the Pretoria guys met up sort of in near the Spoorcase, people will know, and then we hooked it on the R21, and we met the Joburg crew who came past the airport near Serengeti, headed towards Babsfontein and out the back of Pretoria. Then we headed into Pretoria past the Kitty Hawk airstrip and into the east of Pretoria, and then onto the N4 and into town, and ended up at the Lollipop Roadhouse, which is, I believe, one of the oldest roadhouses in South Africa. It started in 1937 and it's been at the same spot. So it's quite a historical motoring spot in Pretoria, given that it's been there that long. And it's like, anybody who's ever spent any time in Pretoria will know about the Lollipop Roadhouse. So yeah, and it's a nice open air venue. You've still got good food, good roadhouse food, and perfect for social distancing, because nobody has to be on top of each other. It's a good space to spread out and have a chew the fat about the classic cars.
Exactly, and there were some fine classic cars there. I mean, there was a mini there, I think, that revved up to 9,000 RPM, had all kinds of trick parts in it. Whose car was that, Stu? I mean, are you allowed to say, or you know?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. That was another Stuart Gregg, who works from home. He builds minis. That's what he does as a job. I think he used to have a proper job, but the hobby of building minis got large enough that he can sustain himself. So that was actually his race car that is road legal, but he needed to stretch its legs. I think the last time it was out was for a race in PE, which was the Mini 60th, I presume. I think that was probably last year already.
Yeah,
so that was the last time it was out. To give it a good run. That's got a cross flow head on it, so you would have noticed a big bump in the front of the bonnet. And so the carbs are situated front. Two big Weebers instead of a normal little SU that would have been at the back on an original Mini. And sounded like a supercharger. I don't know if it came past you at all. I thought it was a superbike or something. And it sounds like a supercharger whine, but it's actually a straight cut gearbox. So anyone who knows race Minis back in the day will recognize that sound. And it was pretty awesome. I mean, it was probably the quickest of the cars there, even though we don't really like to do any illegal stuff and speeding and that, and just play it safe. But we can still be quick to the speed limit. That's always the fun part with the older cars, is just get to the speed limit as fast as possible. That's the winner.
Exactly. I mean, I saw that thing. There were some super bikes that came by, and they were kind of taking it, well, reasonably slow. And then the Mini was like, right, he's going to have a bit of a go here. Changed down a gear or two, and it just, I mean, that thing was impressively fast. And I think the guys on those bikes were actually a little bit surprised. You know, it's a little bit of a sleeper. You're not expecting that kind of performance from that kind of car.
And now, I mean, at the other end of the scale, we picked up, I don't know if you noticed, just as we came around the sort of Kitty Hawk side and the small holdings out, I think it's east of Pretoria there, we picked up a Series 1 Land Rover, which I don't know if that can do the speed limit, but just sort of shows the variety that's out there from, I think, what did we have? A few 911s, hot minis, a couple of Mazdas, Ruben in his VW, and then a Series 1 Landy. You know, so it's different strokes, you know.
It was a great diverse field of cars. And Ruben, I'm going to move on to you. I mean, you've got this really cool Volkswagen variant. And it's just got one of the most beautiful patinas I've ever seen in like an older car. You know, it's got a couple of nicks and dents and, you know, it certainly shows marks of a life well lived, which I think you'll never be able to recreate. Tell us a little bit about this car.
Yeah, so it's the car that I own is a 1969 VW Squareback. This model of car came in three variants, like a fastback coupe style and a sedan, which is called a notchback, and then the station wagon that I've got. I own the car for 10 years now, and I bought it from an old lady by knocking on the doorbell about, you know, 10 years ago, and she had it since new. She says she used it for her kids, and it was their car. But it never did like big mileage. It was run around Pretoria. The car never had left Pretoria. But, you know, like you said, it needed some work. And over the time that I've done some work on it, put on some wheels, I've recently done some work on the interior and rebuilt the motor. So it's like, you know, everything mechanically, the car is now 100%. And inside, it's cool. So, like, I like what it looks like now. And it's original paint, but it's only going to be the original ones. And, yeah, like you say, the patina is something that I like, and as long as the car's mechanically sound, you know, it bears the scars of a life well lived, like you said, and I enjoy it like that because it's a good conversation piece. You know, wherever you stop, people want to chat about the car. It's not a trailer queen at all. It's a car that I want to use and do these kind of trips on it. And if I want to throw my dogs in the back, I don't have to feel bad. I do that and I enjoy it. So yeah, it's like a toy and a car that I really enjoy driving.
It's a fantastic car. And what is it like to work on? I mean, because you kind of do most of the mechanical stuff yourself, right?
Yeah, so that's part of the allure for me is, like, you know, we spend our lives behind computers. And I can go to the garage and think on stuff. And, you know, like during lockdown, we re-upholstered the car ourselves. So, like, just, like, you know, learning stuff like that. And, yeah, the car's not bad to work on. A lot of the stuff is the same as a Beetle. So the parts, like engine parts and that kind of stuff, is available because I shared with a Beetle. But yeah, the stuff is getting hard to find. Parts are getting hard to find. But luckily, as the stuff gets harder to find, you know, the internet has become more helpful in that regard. I mean, before you would go scratching around a swap meet, now you just hit it in Google and you can find the parts wherever and import it here in fairly quick time nowadays with some good shipping and that. So, you know, that's, I think, what's made the classic car ownership more accessible to more people, is that globally the stuff is available, and it's just a click of your credit card away. And sometimes it hurts a credit card more than others, but it is possible to keep these cars going.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd say, you know, in 2020, there's never been a better time to be a classic car owner. Because as you pointed out, I mean, there are all sorts of parts suppliers all over the world, you know, and whether you're into old air-cooled VWs or Porsches or Mercs or whatever your poison may be, there's a supplier out there who's got stuff, or is even in some cases remanufacturing things, yeah. which is really cool. Stu, do you want to chip something in? I heard you firing up those vocal cords. Or
I have French cars, so
yeah.
I was riding passenger in a Japanese car. There's, yeah, French cars, but yeah, I mean, it's a similar sort of thing. Everything is available, but I did decide to strip it. It was a nice sort of patina look as well, and for some reason I thought I'd tidy up one thing, and then it snowballed. So my Renault is on axle stands waiting for that credit card to click a bit more. And yeah, but for now I'm just riding with guys we know, And I went in a Mazda MX-5, so that's pretty modern by our classic standards. Ruben and I, we generally like one rule on our runs, and that is that it's no factory cup holders can be fitted to the car. So I think that sort of brings the age. I think it's probably about 1989 is when the sort of factory cup holders took off. But but anything goes, you know, 25 years or older is our sort of favorite genre, but we're not fussy because it's half of the time it's the guys rather than the cars, the guys and girls rather than the cars, you know.
And that's it. I mean, I think a big part of the classic car scene is meeting the people and listening to the stories, you know, and it's fun to hang out with some like-minded people and chat to people who own cars similar to yours, you know, and you can compare notes and swap war stories. Dennis, I'm going to bring you in here because I know you've got a couple of questions for the guys. So I'm going to stop talking for a bit.
Thanks, Thomas. I just wanted to ask, are you guys aware whether Piston Ring meetings are starting up again?
I'm not sure on Piston Ring. I was on the POMC website yesterday. That's the Pretoria Old Motor Club, who do a lot of the runs. They still have their monthly stuff listed from, I think they start again in September. They've got them, but it's not concrete. And their cars in the park, which is traditionally, when's it, Ruben? August, first week of August, I think. Yeah, that's been moved out. They've said September, but haven't given a date yet. So everything is kind of on hold with all of that sort of stuff, I presume. Piston Ring is the same, VVC, and all those sort of monthly club meetings at the moment are all still listed, but none of them are going ahead. So Joe Public, I wouldn't know how they get to know. It seems to be a bit of the insider. The guys know when it's going to start, but yeah.
Well, it's good to hear that with so many events being cancelled, including Concourse SA, that Cars in the Park looks like it might still go ahead just at a later date. And then one question, just out of the blue here. I occasionally, for my sins, just go on to Auto Trade or something like that and look at some of the interesting classic cars that are on sale. And I see that at Executive Cars in Randburg, there's a Maserati Biturbo 2.5, 1984 model on sale for 165,000 Rand. Now, I want to ask you each in turn, old Italian muscle, yes or no? Stuart?
I'm a fan of them. Is that the Goldie bronze-colored car?
Correct.
Yeah, I've actually taken it for a test because I'm a bit of a fan, but I do like to make my life difficult.
Okay, so it's a yes from you, Stuart.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, so half the allure of the classic car ownership is that I can work on the cars myself, and I'm a bit worried that something like that is a bit advanced to me and I won't be able to keep the smoke within the electrical wires of that car in my garage. And, you know, I don't have to rely on somebody else to keep the cars, maintained for me. You know, like on my cars, myself and my dad can do most of the things. So, you know, then as soon as you have to start finding someone who can work on a Maserati, then it just becomes a headache, I think.
Yeah. Thomas and I spoke about whether we would buy a French car, an Italian car, a couple of argumentatives ago. So I was wondering what Thomas would think about buying a 1984 Maserati.
Jeez, I think it sounds like a world of pain, a long sentence of expensive bills and frustration and like endless troubleshooting hours. I don't know. I mean, it's on paper, it's quite a cool car, and I can appreciate them. I'd like to drive one. Would I like to own one? Don't think so, no. So from my side, Dennis, I'm unfortunately giving it a thumbs down.
If I could just add, I think like there's a bit of a cutoff. Like my car is like late 60s, early 70s, and they were still very mechanical. And then like people started like getting fancy like by the 90s, and then it's like even with motorbikes, I know Rehat is busy restoring a Yamaha RD350, and that's like one of the first bikes that had a CDI, and that thing's giving him serious headaches now because it was like at the beginning of, you know, vehicle electronics, and that stuff is still very, you know, rudimentary, and that's where the trouble comes. So I think there's like one is either go for something older that's fully mechanical or something that's a bit newer when the electronics was a bit more stable and and better developed, I think.
No, when Thomas said that this Maserati might be a world of pain, I mean, I've come across that sentiment a couple of times with a couple of cars that I looked at. When I started my classic car journey, my first port of call was a Porsche 928. And I went and test drove one and fell in love with it until a Porsche mechanic told me, stay away, don't do it. So unfortunately, yeah. That'll have to remain a distant love affair.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the sad thing. I mean, I personally think the 928 is a great car, and I think it's aged very well. There was actually one at the car meet on Sunday, and it's very cool. It still looks spacey. It still looks, you know, exciting. But from an ownership point of view, I don't know. It's unfortunately just very complicated for what it is. I think that's about it, guys. That's about all time we have for chatting about classics. But some interesting things raised there, and it's good to see them still on the roads and still being enjoyed. And Stu and Ruben, thanks for organizing that outright. It was a draw. We're gonna have a quick break and we'll be back with the show again shortly.
Uyazi umzansi Celebville is filled with flavor.
But you know that ge o batla go tseba gore fame e re mongwaneng. Or who secured the latest bag.
Or just who's dripping with sauce.
And who's adding the spice.
Jonga yonki into nje.
Because if it's hot, then it's definitely in the Chisa pod.
Chisa!
Welcome back to Cargumentative. It's that time of the show where we all discuss the cars we've been driving. And to kick it off, let's move on to Dennis. Dennis, what's been in your garage over the last couple of days?
I'm happy to say that I got a chance to drive the Porsche 718 Cayman GT4. And I can unreservedly say that this is the best car I've driven this year so far, and possibly will remain so for the remainder of the year. This is as purest as you can get in the 718 Cayman range. It's a mid-engine sports car. It's rear-wheel drive, normally aspirated, 4-liter six-cylinder engine, and manual gearbox. So, I mean, what could possibly go wrong with that? And who could possibly be against such a package? And, I mean, everything that I've just rattled off spec-wise comes together as such a sweet driving car. I mean, it revs to 8,000 RPM, and it sounds amazing when you do that. So even though it's got a lot of torque across the rev range, you find yourself revving at over 7,000 RPM quite often just to hear that sweet engine note, that flat six. And compared to regular Caymans, it's also got a chassis that's lowered by 30 mils. So it's got better handling. It's got Porsche torque vectoring. So it's a proper little light sports car. And when I say light, I don't want anyone to think that this is under-endowed in any way, because even though it doesn't have a gazillion kilowatts like in the Ferraris and Bugattis of the world, it's just such a sweet thing to drive. And if any of you guys have driven Caymans before, maybe you can back me up on this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was a massive fan of the previous generation GT4. I got to drive it at Le Mans, which was quite an experience, alongside a GT3 RS. And at the end of the session, I was more impressed with the GT4 actually. And if somebody had said you can take one home on your flight tonight, I probably would have gone for the Cayman. It's just, you know, it may not have the raw horsepower, but in terms of you know, how it feels and how engaging it is. Sure, it's definitely up there with the best of them. Yeah. Ruben, I don't know if you drive it.
No, I mean, I've driven the previous one, but yeah. So I've probably driven something that's completely on the other end of the spectrum. We recently drove the new 2020 Nissan Patrol. So that's a big SUV that rivals like the Toyota Land Cruiser 200. It's got a normally aspirated petrol VK56 V8, So no, that's also like one of the old school, you know, old school V8s in there, and you know, 17-inch wheels. So it's really a proper, you know, sidewall, really a proper off-roader with proper old school power. And I can see why the guys in Dubai love them so much for playing around in the sand dunes. So that, yeah, that's something that I've been driving recently. But then I also want to make a U-turn on our previous statements about the French cars. It was on Sunday afternoon. I got a flip in a French Alouette helicopter from 1959. And this is, you know, a turbine helicopter that set the world altitude record in early 60s. And, you know, you service it with a grease gun, basically. So, I mean, yeah, French cars might not be the most reliable, but they, you know, maybe in aviation, they did some great things. And that was really, I mean, that's a classic helicopter and something that's also very appealing to somebody who likes things more mechanical.
That must have been what, a Alouette 2?
Yeah, so Alouette 2 is an ex-French army helicopter that was stored after they used it in a mountain cave for a while until it was imported to South Africa about 10 years ago and then recommissioned and is living a pampered life now in South Africa.
That's very cool. I mean, I remember, I think that the South African Air Force used to have those, and then obviously they got the Alouette 3 as well later on. But geez, that's a proper experience, not something you get to do every day.
No, so yeah, I mean, that thing, I've flown in a couple of new helicopters, and you know, that's a 61-year-old helicopter that feels as stable as anything new and as safe as anything else that I've been in. So it's really testament to the engineering of back then of developing this very basic in terms of mechanicals machine, and it's still doing a great job today.
Mm. Well, I won't ask the price on the Alouette, but
they're not too expensive, Tom. You can get one for less than the Range Rover that I'm driving at the moment, so it's not too bad.
Are you serious? Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing the Cayman would be more than that. Dennis, how much does that Cayman go for?
It's about 1.5 million, Thomas, which in terms of sports cars is a bit of a steal.
It is, actually. I mean, when you dissect the market and work out what you'd have to pay to get something that offers such a purist driving experience, 1.5 bar is not all that shabby for that car. Considering that the previous GT4, I think when that came out back in 2014, I think it was, that was about 1.2 million rand, so it hasn't increased that much. But I mean, I'm just glad to see Porsche going back to six-cylinder engines in the Cayman. I think going to the four-cylinder was a mistake, and I think they've realized that, you know, hence why we've got a six-cylinder GT4 again. And hopefully going forward, we'll see a return to the six-cylinder even on lesser models.
Yeah, I didn't mind the performance of the four-cylinder turbos. They certainly kicked out good power. But in terms of charisma, nothing beats revving a normally aspirated six-cylinder to 8,000 RPM.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, that four-cylinder sounded awful. And also, it was promising fuel economy figures that you would never get. And previous owners who had the six-cylinder who'd upgraded to the four-cylinder said that the older cars were actually better to run from a mileage point of view. So I think, Porsche made a bit of a faux pas there. Stu, I'm going to move on to you because you often, all sorts of cars come in and out of your garage. So what have you been piloting?
What have I driven? It's been a bit quiet. You know, the guys were, with lockdown, guys weren't using their classics, or we weren't going on shoots or anything like that. I sold my 1984 205 GTI. I sold it, and the guy only took delivery of it just after we went to stage 3. So that was the last real classic I drove. I drove it to his house to hand over the keys. Other than that, I've been driving my 2012 Fiat 1.2 ex Avis rental car.
Nice.
It's pretty gutless, but I settled the finance last month, so it's now the best car I've ever owned, and we'll just keep belting it until it falls apart.
Exactly. The best car is a paid-off car.
It's the first time I've ever got that far. I've never kept a car so long. I've amazed myself.
I'm actually quite surprised to
replace it with, but maybe I've grown up because I'm deciding to just live with a paid-off car for a while.
Yeah, it's better. It's got air conditioning and, you know, Bluetooth. What more do you want? Bluetooth. Yeah. And Bluetooth. Has it got Bluetooth? Jeez.
Yeah.
Full what on. Year is that, Fiat?
12.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Oh, nice one. Well, from my side, what have I been driving? I mean, I haven't had a test car this week, so I've just been driving my Classic, which has been quite fun. It's been behaving itself for a change, which is nice. I think I've got a Citroen Aircross lined up and a new Corolla lined up. So, yeah, something to look forward to. Guys, I think that's it. We've run out of time. Producer Paige is whirling her hands on the virtual world of Skype and telling me to wrap. So, I'd just like to thank you, Stu and Ruben, for joining us. And Dennis, again, thanks for being my co-host in the Cargumentative Pod Seat.
Thank you. And it was good to have our guest with us this week. Thanks for coming in, guys, virtually.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
It was excellent. Yeah, guys, thanks for taking the time out to join us on the show. That's it for this week's episode of Cargumentative, and be sure to join us again next week for another, diatribe on cars and motoring and maybe some more classic helicopters. Until then, keep safe, keep warm. We'll see you again next week.